Joy, 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 ever new, joy, joy.
Okay, Benai, what number member were you?
A number. There was a thing that said number six.
Okay.
So I think, you know, who was ahead of me? It must have been Joe Tisch,
uh-huh.
because he was with Swami in San Francisco. Seva, okay. because she was with Swami. Jaya took some classes. I don't know who the other, one or two might have been. Yeah. I still use it as a password.
Okay. Number six. That's great. Was Satya there before?
Satya came a month ahead of of my coming to Ananda.
Okay, great. Which was what year? Did you come?
1968.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah, I was in tail end of college, okay. and that was during the Vietnam War. And, you know, tough time for guys especially, mm-hmm. that since the army was looking for recruits, and not recruits, that was draft. And I got drafted by mistake because I was a full-time student my senior year in college.
Okay.
But I had a good friend who was Tom Hopkins, mm-hmm. and he actually came to Ananda in the first year or two, and he helped me a lot. And he was having trouble with the government. He had actually was a part of the National Guard, and I can't remember exactly what it was. It wasn't a desertion, but it was something where he had legal problems with him. So I was drafted while I was in college. They were so hungry for guys that they didn't give any time for, what do they call it, appealing, you know, letting them know that I was really in college. And so, and I had so many friends. I was in a fraternity for a good part of that college time. And I had friends that had been in the Army, had gone over to Vietnam. So I knew kind of what was happening there. I did not want to participate. And so I became a member of SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, and actually moved out of fraternity to a SDS house. I eventually turned in my draft card with a number of other people. David Harris, who was married at the time to Joan Baez, mm-hmm. and she was connected with that same movement. We called it October 15th, because on that day, October 15th, we went to, in front of the draft board, called out the, the federal marshal, and turned in our draft cards. And then I laid low, because they had told me, you know, went to an interview with the FBI, and they said, we're going to, you know, you're going to be arrested, and okay, I'm prepared for this. But actually, in preparing for it, I knew that I was going to be in jail, and I wanted to have an inward bearing while I was in jail. And that's where Tom Hopkins helped me especially. His parents were pretty wealthy. They sent him to a psychiatrist when he was going through his things in Los Gatos. The psychiatrist had a master's autobiography on his desk. And so he introduced Tom to master, and Tom introduced me to master. So that last little bit of time I was still at San Jose State, where I had been going to college, I would go in the library and read Self-Realization Fellowship magazines. I was trying to connect with energy of Yogananda. And in those Self-Realization Fellowship magazines, often in those early days, were pictures of the vice president of Self-Realization Fellowship, who was going around to India and was, you know, one of the main spokesmen, if not the main spokesperson, because Kriyananda was such a good, eloquent teacher. And so then Tom heard about Kriyananda being in Atherton in the Bay Area. And so he went to see him and then reported back to me. He says that they need people. He's bought a piece of property and is building a dome, and they need some helpers. And so, you know, perfect. I didn't have any money. He gave me, Tom, I think, gave me $50 or something. He was a very generous person. And I hitchhiked up. Got run off the road at the corner of Tylerfoot and 49. That was kind of that North San Juan energy. but then I camped out on the way, and then I got to Ananda. There were maybe four people there. Kriyananda wasn't there. I had written a letter to Kriyananda saying I would like to come, and I didn't get a reply, so I just came up. I felt that was the right thing. I felt very much that it was. But at the same time, I was thinking, I want to be a part of a monastery and eventually go to SRF and be a part of the monastery there. But this will do, and I'll be able to be along. I somehow had in my mind this picture of a river that I would be along, and it didn't quite turn out that way, and it wasn't this ashram, though it was interesting. There were a number of those four different people. They were on different kinds of paths, more hippie, Buddhist nun, someone from Haight-Ashbury. But then Kriyananda came up with a group of people. It was probably Jaya and Seva and Jyotish. And they would come up on the weekends and do some work on the dome, actually domes that were being built. And Swami would, one-man band, he would do the everything, music, singing, entertaining us, deep classes. And then I realized this is my place. You know, I really felt very much in tune with what he talked about. And I also read this little mimeographed copy of Cooperative Communities, How to Start Them and Why. And I felt an attunement with that as well. At that time, we didn't have a publishing business. The publishing business was a Gestetner that we ended up setting up in the where the market is now, in the farmhouse. We got that property later, but not too much later. It wasn't but a bit of time and before we realized that we needed to expand. There was this one little girl, Cece. She was, you know how some kids can run around and scream? Well, she was very good at that. And was one of the reasons that we went, oh, this meditative environment, we need our own, you know, we need a little bit more space for families and for growth. Yeah, we used to, we ended up getting the farm that we would pass by. You know, we'd drive up to the meditation retreat, and we'd pass by this property, and it would be in the middle of winter. It would be not so much snow, not like up at the meditation retreat. Anyway, we found out that property was for sale, and very quickly bought it on people's promises of being able to make payments, help to make payments. The money was gotten together for the down payment, but then there were regular payments that needed to be made too. The first year was an interesting one because it wasn't really well defined what Ananda was, especially as a community. And of course, you had to kind of counteract this idea of commune, which was prevalent at the time. And we call ourselves Ananda Village, Ananda Community. But we still attracted a lot of people that were more, not as deep spiritually, but we grew very fast that first summer. We needed to have a place to live through the winter, though. And that was interesting. I used to go into Nevada City. I like thrift stores. And I would go into this one thrift store. Can't remember the name of the guy who had it. But he had a number of draw knives. I bought, must have been 10 draw knives. And I had been up to Snow Tent Spring. It's about 15, 20 miles up Tylerfoot Road. Anyway, we went up there. We got permits for cutting trees. We were going to make teepees. And so we cut teepee poles and we stripped the bark. We needed a place to stay for the winter. And teepees just seemed like something that was doable. Sadhana Devi organized a number of ladies. They got some old sewing machines. We went and got canvas. So altogether, we probably put up maybe 20 or so teepees for that first winter. My teepee I set up up at the meditation retreat, and it was nice. I painted a sun with sunbursts coming down, and it just had a good feeling. The raccoons liked it, though. They liked it a lot since it was open around. And, I had a fireplace in the center, but teepees can evolve. So it ended up, put in a platform, had to keep the raccoons out, so put in plastic, also plastic so it didn't rain down too much. So the Indian ideal of teepees kind of morphed into just getting by in the winter. Though I lived in a teepee for several years. I can't remember if it was that first year, in the winter. Well, actually, the first year in the winter, I'm going to go back one year. That was Satya and I staying. We were the only people there. And it was very quiet. After a while, those from the Bay Area weren't coming up because of the snow. Actually, we had deep snow that first year, too. But it was very nice. And we'd go into Rena Kemp's house to take showers. We didn't have any, we certainly had running water, but we didn't have toilet facilities at the time. But now I'm going to go back one year in the future. We got to the point where we couldn't make our payments. And so our monthly payments, some people, you know, how people get enthusiastic and they promise and it doesn't always fulfill. But we needed to make those payments or we'd lose the land. So a few of us went into San Francisco and we had a house, an apartment that Swami had a room and he would go around almost every night teaching. His schedule of teaching yoga was intense in order to make money to help pay for the land. And a few of us were in this apartment too, in the different rooms, and we got some jobs, and so that we could help to start do what we could to generate money, because couldn't generate it at the time at Ananda. It was later that we started businesses. Mm-hmm. Sadhana Devi was there, I remember, and a few others. So we must have been there in San Francisco for about a year until coming back. There were still people at the village living here, but so we came back and joined them. It was probably in the spring. There was a point there where we started a monastery, and I joined that with a few others, Hari Das and Prahlad and a number of others. That was a wonderful time. Then we moved. I moved. My teepee was at the meditation retreat. Moved it down to near Swami's house, and we started the monastery there. A few of us were in teepees. Prakash was there too, in a trailer, and there were a few other trailers there as well. The teepee that I brought down from the meditation retreat, we used as our meditation temple. Those were wonderful times. At that time, I get a little confused timing-wise. Let's see. Because I started some businesses, which we needed, but I also ran the publications business. And we would walk across from the monastery to the community, and because very few of us had cars at that time. I remember, though, and this is going backwards again, going down with Seva from the meditation retreat. We would pile into her VW car, and there would be, I don't know how we packed it, was a huge number of people, because, again, nobody had cars, but she did have that VW, and we'd go back and forth between the meditation retreat and the new land, the new village.
I want to know, Binay, is it true that you were barefoot in the snow at the meditation retreat?
Yeah, I enjoyed going barefoot. Yeah, I would, in San Francisco, I was trying to sell product. I would make halva and take it to little coffee shops, and I'd go barefoot there too. And I think I went barefoot to a conference. I can't remember the name of that big hotel, and it was by Harry Brown on how to survive the coming devaluation. Because I was learning about silver and gold as investments.
You mentioned some of the businesses that you started. Can you elaborate on what those were?
First business was a little flower business. I would take, before then, like coming back from L.A., I would gather teasel. Real teasel has these beautiful pods, kind of spiky, but very, very beautiful. And also make pine cone flowers. I would sell those at Cost Plus. Then I would take flowers. This was a business shared with Hari Das and a few others. And we would take little straw flowers that grow right around here. And we'd crunch them. Well, we would dye them different colors, crunch them. Oh, then we'd get lichen off of trees. I remember going down to LA again and, you know, pulling lichen off trees to make beautiful little jewelry from these straw flowers. I had a distributor that encouraged me to be, you know, he would sell to Montgomery Ward's and Macy's, and that worked for a while. But boy, that was during a financial downturn, and they didn't want to allow any raising of prices, and you know, our prices were just too low. It did supply work for people. It was great that way, but it wasn't a big money maker, a business. It allowed 10 people or so to work. The straw flowers. There was another business was sprouting kit, and that was more sold as a promotional thing. Made 5,000 of these sprouting kits. But, you know, sometimes businesses don't go very far, and that was, you know, not much beyond there. It was a nice little kit, though, with a beautiful packaging.
When you say it was promotional, what did it promote?
Promotional meaning that the people that bought it from us were selling it to companies to... And I don't know exactly what they meant by that, giving it away maybe to, you know, to their salespeople. I'm not sure. I wasn't involved in the final distribution of that. Those same people, though, we ended up doing macrame. Uh-huh. And that ended up being a bigger business where, as I recall, we might have had 30 people working. But where you could pick up the parts. We'd buy jute in large quantities, and the beads, and get them in kits so they could be taken by someone home and work from home. So that's why we could have so many people working on it. I was involved with Jyotish in Ananda Village Products. And that was, I bought a big van in order, you know, to get things like the jute from San Francisco. But then we picked up produce for the market in Sacramento. Would take Jyotish's, I'd pick up some of his incense supplies in San Francisco. And also helped to take things to the places where they were being sold. Also, there were candies that were being distributed at the time. Granola, remember taking that in the van. This is a big van, not your normal type van, to San Francisco, to the health food stores. Mm. Yeah, and different businesses to try to just have a flow of money and income for people, not thinking of the businesses so much as personal or trying to make money personally, but to have work for people. Mm. We just kept putting out our energy. Mm. Yeah.
Right. Did Swami Kriyananda ever give you personal advice that you can share, or what was your relationship with him?
No, not so much. He certainly helped me so much over the years. And right away, he made me a minister. Part of that was because of my being wanted by the FBI. And I'm sure it's not the only reason. But I was wanted. I had to, eventually, they came up to Ananda. And I realized, you know, these people are strange, and I kind of didn't allow them to find me. But then I learned that it was the FBI, and they were coming to serve the arrest warrant that I had from, you know, several years before. So I went down to Southern California, where they were threatening my mother with her job. She was a teacher. And then from the, so I saw her, then went back up to San Francisco to the federal building again. And with the help of Tom Hopkins, he passed on this, his lawyer who helped him, and he worked gratis for me. And he came into the federal building with me. I turned myself in. I was put in a little cell for a tiny little bit, but then he got me out in a half hour on my own recognizance. That's when, it was after that, that, I went through a court trial, and the case was dismissed because I was a student. I was a full-time student. They just bureaucratically messed up. But then they drafted me again, just right away. And so that's when Swami made me a minister. Okay. Yeah. And he said, okay, you're a minister. I could be a minister without having to expound.
So how did we get from your early days to here?
A lot. There's a lot of lifetimes one can live at Ananda. Mm-hmm. You know, monastic, those early days, it's the same place. But, you know, we change and have different lessons to learn for a little while. A couple years, still had a house at the meditation retreat that I had bought, that Seva had built. Then I wanted to come back, and in coming back, it was like coming to Ananda anew. And I was no longer part of the monastery, and I took kind of a reintroduction to the community, and then got married shortly after that, and then with the responsibilities of marriage and a child, started a business that would help to support that. Though I worked with the Builders Guild for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. That was fun. In between there, I worked as a timber faller when I was gone from Ananda and owned a couple of restaurants. So I guess I've been involved in different kinds of businesses and activities. Yeah. I like physical work. Like now, I work in our own garden here. I really enjoy that, as well as the jewelry business, which Lena and I started pretty much, you know, within a year or two of being married, and just grew it over the years. 30 years ago, that was.
Tell me more about that business and how you serve others through it.
Well, I prayed to Master for the right thing to do when I came back to Ananda, because before then I'd been involved more in community businesses, and I just felt working with the astrological stones was the right thing to do. In meditation, it felt right. But I didn't have any money. And astrological stones, kind of expensive, some of them. But I bought a bunch of these boxes that hold nuts and bolts, you know, the assortments. And so I'd have all these drawers that I could fill with things, especially the beads, because I thought, okay, I can't afford expensive stones, but let's get started with gems, but what we now call our craft stones. amethyst, lapis, very pretty stones. And we got that going a little at a time, first out in front of Kmart, you know, hawking our wares. Oh, I did have a candle business too, some time in the past. And we would go with our jewelry, hawking wares reminds me of this, and we'd sell in front of Fisherman's Wharf. It was Fisherman's Wharf, that doesn't sound right. Gigelli Square, mm-hmm. in San Francisco. I've been past there in 10 years or so ago, and I said, oh, there's people doing that still.
Well, you are quite the entrepreneur.
I'm willing to put out energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, sometimes we have to try different avenues. Mm-hmm. But we've been very concentrated with our astrological stones and our craft business. We did have 28 months here where we didn't go out to craft shows at all. And that, life is throwing all of us a curveball, and we have to be able to adapt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we adapted like many others. And now we've just the last 2 months, we've been out to craft shows again, and they're doing good. I don't know for how long with the economy what could come up, but it's nice when it's good.
The lesson I'm getting from you is just to be creative in whatever life gives you, you know, to just do whatever seems most fun and go ahead and try it.
Yeah, I think that it has to be, it can't be just drudgery. It's got to be fun.
One thing I want to ask you is, you know, there's a lot of young people coming and or being encouraged to come, and a lot of young folks relative to us that are taking over leadership positions and such. What's your view?
Bring them on. Bring them in. There's such a it's such a good place, mm-hmm. to live a life, a spiritual life. You know, it was supportive people, and I don't know what it's like out in the world so much, mm-hmm. but here, boy, it's not perfect, but it sure is supportive and the right place to be. Boy, I'd encourage anybody that has the spiritual goals to come here. Yeah. It's what Kriyananda had a vision and provided us with such blessings that Master has. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What parting advice might you give to people if they came to you and said, what should I know about coming to Ananda or in my spiritual life? What would you advise?
I don't know. It has to be a deep desire inside, which, you know, many of us have, and I'm sure many more have. And just to be able to have courage that God will provide. If we think that the world's going to give us what we want, you know, it just does not seem the right place to put our faith. But God provides. Mm-hmm.